Hi, this is Dr. Carl Goldkamp. If you're interested in learning about the ketogenic diet like I was, to save my own life, then this is probably the podcast for you. 8 years ago, I knew nothing about it. 6 years ago, it saved my life. 3 years ago, I started researching and talking with some of the authorities in the field and attending medical conferences about this to understand why and how keto so dramatically changed my and my wife's Judy's lives. The purpose of this podcast is to share our journey of discoveries with you in understanding how keto is so effective in improving so many different conditions, from obesity, epilepsy, diabetes, infertility, MS, Alzheimer's, heart disease, to name a few. So take a step away from all the hype you've probably heard and roll up your sleeves with me and join me weekly to explore this living miracle that anyone can access. We'll talk science, we'll talk food. We'll explore its history and evolution to today, which is that the sheer wonder of the ketogenic way of eating has changed untold number of lives, unlike anything before it. And in case I forget to mention it, please join our Facebook group, Keto Naturopath. Hi, welcome back to the next episode of the Keto Naturopath. I'm Dr. Carl Goldkamp. You know, there's an issue I'm kind of bugged about today, and I guess I'm just going to go at it. And let me give you a little context here. So now I've been doing this podcast for about 4 years, and primarily I got into it to save my own life, and concurrently changed my wife's life. And we've talked about that before. She had a brain tumor, and I came away from severe gut problems. That's enough said on that. But I had to go deeper on this. I didn't go deeper out of, gosh, I have nothing to do. I'm tired of sitting on my hands in life, and I think I'll just start talking about something. No, these are coming from the eyes of desperately wanting to stay alive and desperately wanting to be healthy when things did not work. That's where I started this. That's where the angst came for this. That's why Keto Naturopath, it was kind of natural in terms of a title, got into keto, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. Duh. There you go. And the YouTube is the same name to be conspicuous. But not everything that I talk about is about keto. I see keto as in very low carb, or in our case, pretty much no carbs most of the time, as being a foundational basis, the foundation for nearly everything else we do. And so I look through the perspective of being on keto for a number of years. We've evolved into what we call a mostly protein-sparing modified fast, but I'm still going through questions that come in. There's still things that I'm unsure of. It's not etched in stone. There is no deep research to go on carnivore or keto, or certainly protein-sparing modified fast. That seems to be a bit of a esoteric sort of subcategory of keto. However, I think there are some good topics to talk about that are actionable information. So the whole point here is to be actionable information, not to be a know-it-all. Oh gosh, I did this and you should do this, or isn't this interesting? All of this is to, in essence, I'm talking to myself of 8 years ago. How do I help that guy and that woman not die in those contexts? How do I help them have the hope that they can move forward? And it's not going to be a Shazam approach. You do this and you will be good. No, it's work. Work is implied in every day of my life. I don't know. I don't go to the gym because it's fun, you know, and we always have the conversation. Do we know go to the gym today? You know, sorry, there's work is implied. So I come from that. Perhaps that's a turnoff, but I can only give you the unvarnished truth that I am living by. And I don't always meet up with those. We do cancel some of those workout mornings and so on. But what I want to get in today is a thought that came in from something I saw on YouTube, because I was trying to research another topic on uric acid. It's become kind of topical now, and I'll get to it later. But I find that that's less of an issue than, you know, it's more of a commercial sort of rise and fall of something that's trendy, but it's worth looking into. Anyway, that the topic now is about, in my love of liver and my love of egg yolks, am I encouraging people to go too far in that? Why do I say that? It's not too far for me. I've been living pretty well so far, but liver is a pretty concentrated organ meat. And when you talk about organ meats, the things that come up on the surface level of its liver specific would be about, oh my gosh, what about all those, you know, liver toxicity of, well, vitamin A is the top of that list, and other things that come in liver like copper and chromium and so on. What about those? And there's a lot of fear mongering, and there's another trend that's coming out about, oh, vitamin A toxicity in liver. Well, that issue is well over 150 years old, and it comes up annually. And part of it has to do with 150 years ago, the context was polar bear liver. There were actually people who died on expeditions in the Arctic because they ate polar bear liver, which is the most toxic liver you could eat because it's so high in vitamin A. I'll tell you how it got there in a second. But I want to, this concept, I want you to sort of like tattoo on your hand or put it in front of you as I'm talking, is that everything is toxic. Water is toxic. Air is toxic. And you can break that down to oxygen is toxic. Carbon dioxide is toxic. Nitrogen is toxic, hence air. And then, of course, you get into the pollutants and they have their own little categories. It's the volume. It's the amount. It's the serving. It's the weight. It's the dose. That's what we have to talk about. So anybody can instill immediate fear and apprehension about doing anything good by saying, you know, that could be toxic. And being a naturopathic doctor, my first years of medicine, relative to my patients that were shared by conventional doctors, all of the patients would come back to me and say, well, Dr. Brown said, you know, vitamin C could be toxic. That was back in the early days. Can you imagine that? Well, vitamin D, it's going to melt your bones. You know, you're getting too much vitamin D. Really? Too much vitamin D. How do they know? And it goes on and on and on. That was the continuous automatic if they had nothing intelligent to say, well, that could be toxic. He said I should do green tea. Well, that could be toxic. You know, and so and I have no problem with the statement other than it's incomplete in the sense of, well, how much is toxic? That would be a more intelligent approach. Vitamin D is toxic and fill in the blank. It certainly can be toxic. It is not benign, and so much of the dose depends on your deficiency. Anybody who's been following my videos and so on know that I like to address deficiencies. The problem about deficiencies is once you address them, people get a remarkable response, and they think this is the thing that they should take for the rest of their life. They missed the point, which is we just addressed your deficiency, and that's why you feel so good. After you surpass your deficiency, you've taken care of that. You're going to feel less and less spectacularly good if you keep increasing the dose of the thing you're taking. Name your B vitamin or your fat soluble vitamin or your essential fatty acid or your essential amino acid. You can go too far. And people do go too far because they can today. Everything is a supplement. So name your favorite amino acid. You can go too far. Whereas 150 years ago, how much meat could you eat? Could you have access to? Could you afford to eat? Could you eat before it spoiled? Because there wasn't refrigeration around. So when you get those contexts of how we, where the world we evolved from, and I'm just going back 150 years, you were in a whole different world. It was the world before supplements. It was the world before refrigeration. It was the world before automation of all these things. So now we've come into a self-induced possible toxicity environment. It's no longer about the pesticides that came in on the food that you eat, or it's in the air or in the water. That's clearly still there, by the way. It didn't disappear. And some of them are terrible stories to have, depending where you live. But the part that you have to play, how much stuff are you putting into your mouth via supplements? And I'm not anti-supplements, I'm for supplements, but I'm for an educated use of supplements. They're meant to supplement a deficiency. If you don't have the deficiency and you start scarfing these things, you are going to get a toxicity. So a lot of that fear-mongering about, oh, it could be toxic. You know, vitamin B, that could be toxic. There you go. You can be the fear-monger next week. You know, that could be toxic. Whatever anybody says to you about anything they're doing, you say, well, that could be toxic. And then just continue. But when it comes to liver is about the most, since that's really the only organ meat anybody has, if they have that at all, you know, they don't have kidney, they don't have spleen, they don't have thymus. I'm speaking of the United States because having been in South America, they do have those things. They do, you know, They do have intestines, chitlins. They do have heart. Heart's not a, really an organ meat, but it's not a common thing that most people have. They don't have lung, and they certainly don't have brain. So in 50 years since I was a wee little kid or more, where you used to be able to get all those things in the grocery store, in the, you know, in the meat section. Can you imagine that? Now there's nothing there. There's nothing unusual or, you know, and there's no offal there. You know, the offal is all the organ eating the rest of the non-meat products of the animal. It's just not there anymore. We've been talked out of it for toxicity reasons. And mad cow is certainly a big mover in the brain. So back to liver. Yes, liver can be toxic in vitamin A. If it's toxic in anything, put it this way, anything can be toxic in itself. So as you start having more and more liver, what are the first things that will become toxic for you? Most likely it'll be vitamin A. And after that, it'll be copper and then chromium. And so what does that mean? That means not so much that it's bad, is that you have a smaller amount of that. So things that are really concentrated, nutrient dense, you have smaller amounts. Things that aren't as nutrient dense, you don't have to worry about that much. So if you just ate meat every meal, every day, that will have certain deficiencies for sure. And they'll have certain excesses, depending how much you eat in the course of the day and so on. So the idea of toxicity is just so prevalent. You know, I the reason I'm hanging around this one topic of vitamin A toxicity that is acquired through liver is that it comes up on a number of my videos. What do you think about vitamin A toxicity in the liver? You know, they miss... It's an unintelligent question or an uneducated question in the sense that it misses the key variable. It's like, well, how much air do you breathe before it becomes toxic? Well, in that case, since it's a gas, it would be about the concentration, but we're still talking about the unit, right? We're talking about how much. How much vitamin B3 can you take before it becomes toxic? Well, that's what the RDAs are about, which is kind of amazing about vitamins, because vitamins, vital amines, which is a vitamin, really didn't get discovered until through the 1920s and 30s, even into the 40s. So it's really a pretty recent, less than 100 years ago. And now we're, you know, so the world lived without knowing about any of that information. And I don't think there was much in the way of vitamin A toxicity and or death and or experiences of some of the excesses, the toxic symptoms, because it wasn't available. But now you can have a refrigerator full of liver if you want to. And so, and you can eat your way to toxicity. It's certainly not advised, but it's because I am such a believer in egg yolks and liver. I didn't tell you how much, did I? Egg yolks and liver as a daily part of your diet, because it has the choline and the folate and the B12, the three big variables, let alone the other vitamins and minerals. But the question is, how much should you have per day? So, and having to sort of catch this topic coming around, like, oh my gosh, have I been, you know, encouraging people to go liver crazy? And I've yet to find a person who's liver crazy out there. But these ideas of having too much liver because of vitamin A, copper, and chromium are not bad. They are correct. But I don't know that many people that can have, you know, 3 or 4 ounces of liver every day for 3 months in a row, because that's pretty much what it would take. And what I would say is, in case you really wanted to get a more accurate representation of maybe what you're eating, should you be one of the enlightened few that are actually having liver in your weekly dietary menu of things you have, then I would just use Chronometer. It's a free app online, and plug in what you're having. And therefore you can assess, and that's not the gospel truth, by the way, but it's reasonable. I use it as a reasonable rendition of the nutrients in the foods that whosever diet I'm evaluating. And the reason I'm evaluating that is actually I'm mostly looking for egregious deficiencies. I've never, ever seen somebody who's been eating too much liver and or egg yolks. You could put that. There'd be a lot of egg yolks. And in the idea of how much too much was too much liver and too much egg yolks in terms of choline, B12, and folate, that was a different, you know, you can have a lot more relative to that. So the limiting factor is about vitamin D relative to liver. And you can say, well, what about the chicken liver, turkey liver, beef, lamb, sheep, pork? They're all neck and neck. And there again, use chronometer to sort of say, gosh, is it a little more or less with pork or to chicken or turkey and so on and so forth. And you have it as pate. So you have it as a, I don't know what the word is, but as a special little dish to the side. It's not so much a condiment, something that you would put on. You know, I would use it as kind of a butter that you would swipe it out and you would put it on something, but you don't gob it on, you know, 15 tablespoons a day. So what I'm reacting to here is the alarmist idea of, wait a minute, what about liver? You can get vitamin A toxicity. Well, that has happened, and it does happen, apart from the polar bear liver, in people who go too far, you know, and I do realize, I say, who's, you know, people would look at what we're doing in our diet is going too far. I've stopped caring about what other people think about once I was really sick, and even my colleagues couldn't help. You know, like, well, I don't know, you tried this, I don't know. It's like, gee, you really need to go to a doctor. Thank you very much. And how useless they were in turning your trust over, that it's a responsibility you have for yourself, for your health. And that's my passion about that. And not, and there is a degree of work involved in that. So liver has come up as this alarming flag, like, oh my gosh, you know, you are just an idiot if you're advising people to have liver. No, I'm advising people to have liver appropriately. And appropriately doesn't mean gobs of liver. It takes a long time to generate a vitamin A toxicity, but why even, you know, cross the line? So I went back to chronometer myself, and I have these charts in front of me of liver, and I used 3 ounces only because when I started doing this comparison of choline and folate and so on and so forth, I used 3 ounces, just arbitrary. So in 3 ounces of liver, cooked or otherwise, you will get roughly 900% of the RDA, required daily allowance. You could certainly go over that. I'm not saying that they're, say, you know, they're usually under, and that's 26,000 IUs of vitamin A in liver. So you don't need that much. I would say if you did 8 ounces a week, so 8 divided by 7 is just about an ounce. So a third. So even an ounce, if that's 3 ounces, even an ounce says you're three, according to chronometer, you're 300% of vitamin A. So maybe you'd have to go less than that. So how we have vitamin, how it's mostly me that has liver. Judy makes some pate. And so she'll get a package of these packaged livers, and it's about 8 ounces and gets cooked and gets blended up. And then it sits in a bowl in the refrigerator for a week for me to finish it up, and sometimes longer. You know, I dip something in it, and that's how I use it. It's never the full-on meal, and it's nice to have it. Nice to have it that way. So that means that you'd have to get under. I'm looking at chronometer right now for 3 ounces of liver. So we have, that's, I rounded up. 900%. 1 ounce is 300%. A third of an ounce would be 100%. So a third of, according to chronometer, a third of an ounce per day is fine. I would say if you're within, even if you did an ounce per day, 300%, that would take infinity for you to get toxic. And I doubt that, anyway, you have the numbers you choose for yourself. We go through kind of feast and famine in the sense of she makes the pate, she has some of it. And it sits with us for about a week or so. And then it might be a month later, we have that again. So it's certainly averaged. It's more upfront and then none for a while, more upfront, none for a while. And not having everything constantly at the pre-measured levels every day is kind of a more real life approach. So in terms of egg yolks, really not that much, but if you're adding your A's together with your A's, your 3 ounces of egg yolks, which would really be about, I had that figured out before how many egg yolks that would be. I think that's really about, let me pause and find out. Okay, so your vitamin, one medium egg yolk is about a half an ounce, 15 ounces versus 15 grams versus 28 grams makes an ounce. So just about a half an ounce. That would mean that in 3 ounces is 6 egg yolks. So in, also I'll just read off for one egg yolk, the amount of vitamin A you get in one egg yolk is 210 IUs, barely 7% of your RDA. So there's not much in the way of vitamin A. But the problem is that I except for the people that I actually work with, I don't know how people eat. So if they're doing dairy, and dairy has to have vitamin A in it, not naturally, they put it in. So they add synthetic vitamin A and D. And if you're having other processed foods, certainly cereals have vitamin A added, you know, and so they're adding all these things that real world food, whole food sources actually had. So it gets kind of complicated. So now you're adding that portion of vitamin A that came in from your processed food, from the dairy that's been added, not natural. And so it gets very contrived. And then if you're doing any transdermal products for face creams and so on or whatever, you have to add that too. So it's a very contrived way of looking at vitamin A collective possible toxicity for anybody by looking at that. Our lives are nothing like that. We don't have any of the facial stuff for sure. We just, our sources are pretty much egg yolks and liver. And then of course you do get some vitamin A and the meats that we have. And then periodically if we have a salad, which has been really seldom. So that's pretty simple for us to calculate it. But if others have a lot of cheese, there's a lot of vitamin A. All the other dairy products, be it the cream cheese or the cottage cheese or the whatever else. So now you have a whole nother source, butter, of course, of vitamin A. So in our simple way of having a rather simple life, if you ask me, it's pretty easy to calculate. And so am I worried about having too much liver? I just explained that we really only have about it once a month, but we have a feast or famine. I probably could, and there are certain personalities like me, no doubt, that have kind of an addictive personality that even as much as I'm educated in knowing this, that a little is good, a lot is not necessarily better. Part of me does think, well, I'll have another scoop. I'll have another little bit of liver or whatever else. I don't do that often because I know about it, but there's part of me that's inclined to think that way because look at all the other things you get. So you have to be careful with liver, but a 99.9% of the people that I have exposure to don't even like liver. So it's a non-issue. So for those few that want to be so damn healthy that whatever is recommended a little bit of, they'll have a lot of, they will get into trouble and they will be the one that really gives having liver a bad name. So this is about caution around liver, but this is about speaking about it correctly. When you say liver, how much do you have equals how much vitamin A and these other things, the chromium and the copper do you have per day? I wanted to get back to why polar bear liver is the bad example of vitamin A, or good example of vitamin A toxicity. It happened at Arctic Explorers, and you can punch that into Google. I'm sure you'll get a really full story, but it goes this way. You have to look at the word as bioaccumulation. You know, it's just like, why is it the tuna and swordfish and other very big fish are the highest, and probably whales as well, have the highest concentration of mercury in them, heavy metals in them? Well, it's because, you know, the bacteria are eaten by the little fish, and the bigger fish and ate the smaller fish, and it worked all the way up until, you know, tuna were eating a lot of medium-sized fish that bioaccumulated. So it gets more concentrated as you go up. So if you ate, to give you one more example of way of looking at it, if you had a can of sardines, which is, let's say it's 4 ounces, and you put that weight exactly the same for tuna, the tuna head would have 25,000 times more mercury than that equal weight of sardines and or mackerel and or other small fish put in there, anchovies. So that's how that works. It's not weight equivalent. It's bioaccumulated, and it gets very toxic as you get up to the bigger fish. Okay, so to polar bears. Well, polar bears, they eat the marine algae, and the fish, like cod, eat the marine algae. The cod gets eaten by the seals, and the polar bears don't eat the cod so much, they eat the seals. And so now it's at least gone through 4 basic stages and has been very concentrated. So that's why polar bears, and not seals, and not cod, have huge amounts of vitamin A, but they are just one sort of level down from the polar bear. So people do take cod liver oil, and it does have vitamin A in it, but it doesn't have it at such a high concentration as polar bear. So that's how that works. So you have to look at what the thing is, and if we're talking about this particular situation, what the thing is, how much you're having of it, and therefore what's a reasonable expectation to have in terms of vitamin A, etc. So too is that applied directly to vitamin A. Directly to the liver. Be reasonable. You have to fill in the rest of the sentence. Like there's a subject and there's a predicate. There's liver, and then there's how much equals, meaning the volume that you're going to eat, equals how much vitamin A is in it. And of course, what that kind of liver is, but they're pretty close. So that's really important to be aware of the volume, of the dose, of the serving, of the weight of the thing that you're having, to have that calculation. So as I say, go on to Chronometer and do that once through and say, hey, this is what I have, or this is what I'm thinking about having. So don't be afraid if you're serving a liver, if you just have one serving of liver a week, which is not a bad goal to have, or if you're making pâté, you calculate it that way. So bring some common sense of what you're doing. Don't run with the pack that are afraid of one more thing, and they're not going to do that. And consequently, my whole point of bringing up liver and egg yolks in the context of choline, folate, and B12, was that they are directly helpful to things like all chronic diseases for sure, but Alzheimer's and dementia and cognitive impairment was my theme for exploring the world of choline. And then, of course, got into polymorphisms and so on and so forth. But that's it. Most people don't have egg yolks. Most people don't have liver. And consequently, they suffer the deficiencies of not having those. They don't suffer the toxicities of having too much. Please think about the serving size. Don't fear this. Be reasonable. Apply some common sense. We got a life to live, and we want a good life for you.
Hi, this is Dr. Goldkamp again for a brief reminder of something I completely forget to do at the end of every episode. You've heard me talk long enough in many different episodes, but what I would love you to do, and many of you have already done this, I just want to reinforce this particular behavior, which is to send me your questions. Send me your questions on anything you have about keto. If there's something that I don't know, I will look it up. And if it's something that intrigues me, I will probably make an episode, a podcast about that particular topic. So what you need to do is to send me your questions at drgoldkamp@ketonaturopath.com. So that's drgoldkamp@ketonaturopath.com. drgoldkamp@ketonaturopath.com. Feel free to join our Facebook group, which is also ketonaturopath.com. That's been growing lately. You also have to answer a questionnaire should you choose to join. And I don't ask for your email. I ask that you follow our terms. I try to avoid advertising and the obvious interruptions of just a good Facebook group. So hope to see you at one place or other. Please send me your questions, and look forward to talking to you and getting to know you. Take care.